actual evidence of this happening, or is it just your proposal it should happen? I don't know.
I think in my college, at least, the attempt to send our students to people who have actually faced these atrocities against them, and then hold them in conversation to see how some form of resistance towards this caste-based atrocities can be formed. I think that is one way in which this dialogue is happening, but still it's got to be developed.
No, interfaith,
yes.
Your college, the students are presumably Christian.
Yes, that's right.
But I thought the suggestion was an interfaith discussion.
Yes.
Between, say, Christians and Hindus and Muslims as
well. Yes, it's
good.
Interfaith is happening now with people from the Hindu, Muslim, and Sikh communities. Our college involves, but not taking not along with the victims of the atrocities. No. So I think that framework has to be really widened. So where we get all these people, different people, onto the table. Sorry, did I get you?
Yes, that's what I'm asking.
Yes.
Whether it's happening.
It's
because when I visited the Bangalore College,
okay.
Also visited some local churches.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I'm a convert from a Brahmin Hindu family, which is very unusual. And,
mm-hmm.
I'm glad I'm classed as Dalit now, which is something to be proud of. But I got this feeling that some of the things that were being conducted at the academic table were not necessarily what the people in the churches were ready to take on board.
That's right.
There was a considerable resistance to the innovative attempts to integrate and talk and interfaith and all that.
Yes.
Is it some perception that you would, what is your comment?
That's right. Actually, what happened was a few years back, I think about 7 years back, in fact, our college tried to have a dialogue with the RSS chief. At that time, they invited him in. But then it doesn't take them anywhere. It doesn't lead to any concrete results, because they are quite. Because their allegation is that you are trying to convert people. So stop that. And what the Christians say is that conversion or propagating one's religion is a fundamental right which is enshrined in the Constitution, and then nothing happens after that. So it's a stalemate. But now that is why I suggested that we need to really question whom we have as our dialogue partners now, so that there can be some concrete way in which communities which are resisting casteism can be supported and can be partnered at the place where the resistance is happening, at the ground level. And that is why I propose that this could be, that interfaith dialogue has to be really reconsidered at this point. Between Muslims and Christians, and between Dalits, Hindus, Dalit Muslims, and
Dalit
Christians.
Hindus.
Dalit Christians, that's right. So,
I understood you to mean that previously interfaith dialogue had been with Brahmanized aspects of Hindu religion.
Exactly.
In which that was accepted.
Yes.
But what you're saying is that should be challenged.
That's right.
And that, of course, interfaith dialogue, which doesn't get around to challenge, isn't dialogue at all.
Yeah,
so it's very tough, I know, but it's not that you can't just have a nice chat and everything is okay and cozy, but it isn't. You have to actually come
exactly.
to it when you can challenge each other. Challenge them, and they challenge you.
That's right, yes. The other problem with interfaith dialogue in India is that it's too much textual.
Hmm.
Textual.
Yeah,
yes,
that's
right. Because I have my Bible and you have your Quran and you have your Vedas. So let's discuss about these things and then find out. Which means that a section of the community which doesn't have a background in text, which don't have text, are actually left out. And it is the people who
yes.
need to actually benefit from interfaith dialogue.
Okay.
So that is my critique of it. So
somewhere at the beginning in Kandahar, drawing a distinction between the Dalits and the tribals. Were
yes.
you suggesting that the tribals were persecuting the Dalits? I'm not quite sure. In this conflict, you said that you seem to be suggesting that
yes.
the Hindutva group used this triangle.
That's right.
Triangle versus Dunnage, was it?
Yes, yes, yes.
Can you explain that?
Yes, particularly in the Orissa context. I think there are two different groups, which are the tribal Kandas and the Dalit Panos. So what happened was, as soon as the Dalit Panos converted to Christianity, they were denied these reservations.
Yeah.
So because they have been denied these reservations, and they could only get back these reservations if they converted back to Hindu Dalits, what they thought was whether they could actually convert to scheduled tribe status, which the Khans had. So because they both had their origins in the same, had the same origins.
Yes.
So only a difference of language, and later there was some way that these Dalit Panos, who are now Dalits, who are earlier tribals, couldn't benefit from the reservation policies. And then they were seen as threats by the present tribal identified Khans. And so the Hindutva forces actually played upon this problem with reservations, and then said, if these people if they continue to be Christians, then they're going to be a threat to you. So in some way or the other, a few factions of the tribal Khans were also involved in attacking the Dalits. And I give a little bit more about how Hindutva actually has been using these minority groups and the marginalized groups to fight against one another in the two paragraphs that I skipped, I think, on page 9, I think. Yes, the two paragraphs that I skipped on page 9. Paragraphs 2 and 3, and as to how somehow even Dalits are being used to attack Muslims, so that all these minorities and marginalized groups cannot actually work together. Oh, yes.
That are, I understand, stealing the youth away from Christianity towards a more militant form of resistance.
There are two dimensions to that. One is the group which has actually gone along with the Maoists. And the Maoists are the ones who are claiming responsibility. They have claimed responsibility for the killing of Swami Lakshman and the Saraswati.
Yes.
But nobody wants to listen to those claims. Rather, they want to accuse Christians of having orchestrated the killing. But there is also the real threat is from the RSS groups, which are trying to get the young people. In fact, I don't know whether we came on to that point of the video where the relief camps were attacked. The relief camps were attacked by a group of young girls in their teens who have been recruited by the RSS as their as part of one of their brigades. So they have got hold of these young girls in their teens who have become part of their outfit, and they went to the relief camps and actually attacked the Christians who were living in the relief camps. So that is also the other danger. They are the ones, of course, they're not Christians, they're not taking Christians away. But then there's Maoists, I don't know, when we went there, we actually found, we worked mostly with the Roman Catholic Church, which had an active presence in Kandamal. They were quite sympathetic to the Maoists, especially. But I didn't hear anything firsthand about them taking the young people away. Yes, I think the RSS.
Which is a bit amazing, because you think ideologically there's no way, but there's some way in which people want to preserve themselves, to protect themselves.
That's right.
And therefore, it's attractive to be a part of the gang.
Exactly. Yes, I think if you. The page 9, those two. I touch briefly on that. On that. Complexity. I think even page 10, the first paragraph, about why Dipankar Gupta says that Dalits and tribals are in some ways also being attracted to the RSS.
Sorry,
yes.
Remind me what RSS is and what is Adivasi.
Oh, Adivasis are those tribals.
They're the tribals.
Yes.
Yeah.
And RSS is the RSS used to be an outfit which was not political, a part of the Hindutva family, but now it was a banned organization a few years ago, but then the ban has been lifted now, and then they are very active. They are behind most of the political governments in, I think, in Maharashtra, the earlier central government. And the RSS was the party which Savarkar himself started. So
the word RSS stands for Rashtriya
Swayamsevak Sangh. Yes.
And are you aware of the locus of Hindutva in Banaras Hindu University?
Not much, I should say. Yes.
There is a very prominent center there. They are conducting this.
Mm.
And this is in Banaras.
Yes, that's right. The other thing is, along with this, we should also take into consideration there's another outfit, a student outfit of the Hindutva, which is called the Akhil Bharati Vidya Parishad, which has got an active presence in most of the Indian universities. I think it is the youth outfit of the Bharatiya Janata Party. It's got a political presence. I think most people who go on to become BJP politicians have got a ABVP background, Akhil Bharatiya Vidya Parishad. So they try to inculcate the Hindutva ideology into the minds of students right from the campus day.
The new BJP chief is
yes.
now from RSS?
Yes, yes, yes. That's right. That's right.
Quite scary to think that you're...
I think that's the way of making... They're becoming much more explicit with their Hindutva ideology, thinking that that'll get them votes in the next...
Mm-hmm. Which is fascinating because he comes from the Sindh and he claims that and his traumatic experience was the partition where at the age of 20 he was displaced and came to India. It's ironical that he's the sort of solid rock foundation of this movement. He claims that in Sindh there was no casteism.
Mm-hmm.
They had no, it was a shock to him to come and meet the caste structure in India. He had to adjust to it, and he claims, I still keep saying he argues, that is why the RSS, the Hindutva and all his sort of doings, they try to eliminate casteism. You are arguing strongly they want to keep the Brahminical structure,
no.
You know, hierarchical structure.
That's right, that's right.
If you read him, he says that this is one reason why they are recruiting these people to eliminate that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say to
that? In fact, there's one interesting quote from Savarkar. I should have fished that out, where he actually says, thank you for bringing this up, where he actually makes a very astute distinction about people of who are in some way better off, who are sublime, and those base forces, and says that there are attempts to actually co-opt these things into base elements into the sublime. But he goes on to say that these divisions are actually meant to be there. So what happens is, I think what Advani probably has said, there is a way in which they are trying to co-opt the Dalits into the Hindutva ideology on these grounds. They're doing this, saying that we're all one Hindus. We're all one Hindus. But then when it comes to practice, the concept of oneness actually, I think it diminishes. So what does it mean to say that we are one, that we're all one, that we are of the same blood? When you don't, just take a look at the leadership within the party. Just take a look about who is in control of the BJP at several levels. So, and then we'll see that this is only a facade. So casteism is deep and ingrained. It may not be obvious, but still it is deeply embedded within the BJP and the RSS. I think that is, when we talk about the Sanskriti and Sanskriti culture itself, this is part and parcel of it, because casteism is divinely ordained for them. So I Advani may have meant it not, and I really like Advani to have meant it in all sincerity. But I really wish that.
Careful to say he claims.
Yes, yes, that's right, that's right. Thank you. Thank you for that. Yeah.
The caste is based on the whole, everyone is one. They're all one family. We're here, they're here.
That's right.
There's no problem.
the caste is, as long.
It's a unity.
Exactly.
Place.
Exactly. Yes, and based on the divine sacrifice, the first sacrifice in which different people came from the different parts of the primordial being. Of course, it's one, it's unity, everything. But then, when you look at it from those who are outside the system.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Yes. 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 That's right. That's right.
Could I ask about some other terms? You mentioned Rashtra. Now, what is a Rashtra?
Nation.
Nation?
Yes. Yes. Hindu Rashtra is there.
And what is Ram Rajya?
The kingdom of Rama.
Oh,
I'm
yes.
sorry, I should have.
Oh, okay. And what is the meaning of San Parivar?
Okay, it's the Parivar means a family.
Okay.
So it is the family of all the organizations which follow the Hindutva ideology.
What does San mean?
Sangh is actually association, roughly translated. Yes, Sangh is an association, the family of association.
And could you tell me a little bit more about the Vinayaka Chaturthi festival?
Vinayaka Chaturthi festival. Yes, this is a festival which celebrates the Vinayaka, who is considered to be the son of Shiva. And it's a very popular festival, yes, and Parvati. It's a very popular festival in South India. I don't know in North India.
Maharashtra.
Yes, Maharashtra. In Tamil Nadu and Andhra Pradesh, in most of the South Indian thing. And people from all sections, even the Dalits, celebrate this. And they found this to be a good way of actually, in some way or the other, co-opting the Dalits under the Hindu thing, say we're all Hindus, let's all celebrate this festival together. And then somehow use those opportunities to make a division between the Dalits and the Muslims and the other minority communities.
Would you say the same about Diwali? The Diwali festival?
No, the Diwali is much, probably not. Because Diwali is more a household festival.
Oh, okay.
It's more celebrated in the households, whereas Vinayaka Chaturthi is a festival where which has got public significance, because in this festival the idol of the god Vinayak is taken on a chariot in a procession, which is all people are seeing it. People know who is in want to know who is in leadership, and it gives them a wonderful opportunity to say that we are in charge of this. So it's got much more public significance than Diwali, which could be more a celebration of families.
Running spirit Diwali in Fiji.
Oh, did you?
It does unite all the communities there.
Yes.
This is a question concerning the death and persecution of these people in Orissa and the church at large. I mean, persecution of Christians is nothing new. I mean, whatever the background, whatever motivation, whatever the background, this has happened time and again in different societies. And usually, they become martyrs for the church, in the sense they are recognized as such. Has this happened, or is it something only remains of the kind of marginal persecution event in Orissa? What has the church at large in India done about this, in terms of giving a place for these people who have died? When I heard about it here, I asked our priest to pray for these martyrs. I immediately thought of them as martyrs.
Exactly.
That is what they are. They will be called, in the Orthodox Church, they will be called passion bearers, because they bore the passion of the death of Christ on them, because simply by being Christian, not for any other. I just want to know, tell me information.
Yes. Of course, some churches, there's nothing official about it, some churches have recognized these people as being martyrs. But then the problem is, there can be a problem in making these people martyrs, because in some way or the other, it is a glorification of suffering, which actually people are resisting.